For me to be able to get my unmet needs met, I need to understand what they are, and I need to understand what I need to feel like they are being met. Mm. I can't expect my partner to feel it like a blind man with a stick if I don't even know how it can be met. How do I explore that?
So let's say your need is closeness. You want to feel close, you want to feel connected. If you don't know that's what you need, you might just say, you're never there, you never want to do anything with me. But if you understand, okay, that's my need, I want to feel that closeness and that sense of connection. Understanding what you need is one thing, but then understanding how do I need it to be addressed? And then teaching your partner how to do that, which means, you know, communicating, sharing it. Hello everyone, welcome back to Fresh Perspective, where we will be taking another look at life. And in today we're doing another unpacking episode with Dr. Mariki Smit. Hello Mariki, welcome back. Where are you? Let me add you. There you are.
Thank you, Francois. If you say it like that, I'm worried that people are going to start asking me for medical advice. Yeah. So maybe just to qualify. I'm the clever kind.
Yeah.
I'm the
Yes. Doctor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The difficult one. The difficult one to achieve.
Yeah, well, I'm very much married to the other kind, and I can tell you it's also not easy.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. Francois, so my father-in-law used to make the joke and say, oh, if he had known earlier how much fun it was to be married, he would have gotten married in grade 2. So I often think, yes, like it would have been easy to get married in grade 2 because then you don't have baggage yet. You don't have stuff that have happened and influenced the way that you enter a relationship. So in a sense, maybe he's got a good point.
Yeah.
But maybe today we can unpack baggage in relationships.
Okay.
Yeah. And how that influences the way we show up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this baggage is also part of a series I'm doing at the moment. All the baggage that we are bringing to the relationship. And the way I see it is, I think we have three kinds that we bring. There's lots of stuff. So perceptions and all of that. But in broader strokes, I'd say we have unresolved issues that we bring to the relationship. And this might include childhood pre-grade 2 issues that we bring to the relationship, but also issues from previous relationships. So this is more what I mean by issues is maybe we got hurt in a previous relationship. Maybe there was abuse, maybe we were cheated on, whatever the issue is. If we don't resolve it, if we don't work through it, we bring that to the relationship, which means we are more sensitive to the same kind of thing. So we, our reflexes are and reactions are more acute to specific things that our partner does or don't do. And that. So that's the first thing. The second one is unhealed wounds. So where you were hurt, and of course this might include relationships as well, but as a child specifically, those wounds include being rejected or abandoned. I'd say those are the two main headings, being rejected by our parents or abandoned. So rejection meaning we were criticized for being a certain way, doing certain things. And I don't mean when your parents discipline and guide you and try and shape and instill values within you. I mean things like the way children behave. If you are playful, that gets criticized, you know, and you feel rejected. Oh, I'm not allowed to be playful. If you have an idea and you share that gets criticized. And you say, oh, okay, when you discover your sexual organs for the first time and you're very proud of that, that gets criticized, right? I mean, those kind of wounds that tell us, okay, wait, that's not acceptable. That part of me is not acceptable. So those wounds we bring into our relationship, they are unhealed. We didn't attend to them in any way. We bring that to a relationship. And this includes shame. That's why I spoke about like our sexual organs is like shame is around our sexuality can be very, very big. We get told that that's bad and it should be hidden. So we bring that to a relationship. That's why I find Christian couples that were told to abstain and sex is very, very bad and the biggest sin, struggle the most with their sexuality when they get married, because suddenly it's beautiful, you know, and a gift of God, and you can do it as much as you like and all of those things. And then couples struggle because for how many years before that it was seen as very bad. That's a wound in my view that people bring to their relationship. And the last one is unspoken needs. Things that we need. Sometimes we might be aware of it, and other times we might not be aware of our needs. We discover them as we, you know, progress in our relationship. But those unspoken needs is part of what we bring to our relationship as baggage. So, yeah, those are three things that I see as baggage that we bring to a relationship. Mariki.
Francois, I just want to clarify something. For the longest time, whenever a discussion came up about unhealed wounds or childhood wounds, my knee-jerk reaction would be, oh, no, my parents were amazing. I still have a very good relationship with them. I definitely didn't have, they didn't wound me in any way. They were amazing. I just want to clarify, this is not parents who on purpose try to wound you or have shortcomings, right? Yeah. It shows there's a different way to also look at it, where healthy parents can still wound their children and do still wound their children.
Yes. You know, when parents are abusive or they struggle with some form of addiction, you know, that's one kind of wound. And it's kind of obvious to see, okay, that will damage a child. When parents are stuck in conflict and shouting matches, and then they, you know, threaten with divorce, and that wounds children, of course. But the other side of it is, you can still have a great relationship with your parents, and like you said, to this day, have a great relationship with them and appreciate them. But because they are not perfect and they can't read your mind, they will miss some things. I mean, I'm a parent, you're a parent, so we miss certain things, not intentionally. But that can cause wounds within our children. Also, we, because of this baggage that we carry, we have it in our relationship, but also our children are in that space. So that also affects them in ways that might be unseen and we are unaware of. So it's not like having mean parents. Some, you know, it includes that, but it doesn't mean that your parents are bad. And sometimes it's especially when someone's parents are no longer with us, you know, they died, then people struggle to talk about, okay, these are some of the things that I think wounded me as I was growing up that my parents did or maybe didn't do. Does that help?
That helps, thanks. I can obviously only speak on my own behalf, but I know since I met my husband, and for the first, well, we only dated for 10 months before we got married, but let's say for the first 3 years of being together, there was no sign of any baggage. It was like we were the perfect match, right? And I think I can only speak for myself, but there's a pattern there.
Yeah.
It shows up a bit later. Why is that?
So let me get this clear first. So you dated since meeting your husband, dated 10 months or knew him before that?
We knew each other before that for a while. But in our case also, I knew him because he was friends with my cousin. So I knew I could assume a lot of things about him because I have a lot of respect for my cousin. So I could assume that if they were friends with this guy, he's probably not a, I don't know, con artist. So I could assume a lot of things. Although that's maybe an unpacking for a whole other time, I always think there's a lot of luck involved. But yeah.
Yes. No, and I'm asking because the day my wife and I came back from honeymoon, we knew each other 11 months. So it seems that you also had a very intense romantic love phase. So maybe if you are listening to this and you fell in deeply in love with your partner and felt this massive attraction and you know the Jerry Maguire, you complete me kind of feeling, you can identify and understand this. So the reason for that is, you know, we need to be drugged by our brains to move into a committed relationship. So the more intense the romantic love phase, unfortunately indicates the amount of baggage we bring with us that we unconsciously hide from ourselves to not see until later. And that romantic love phase, that easy flowing phase, can last for a long time. Three months to maybe 2 or 3 years, depending on the dynamics. When couples have a long distance relationship, it extends that quite a bit, in my opinion. It seems when I look at couples that they kind of extend it, right? So when they see one another, they miss one another, they only, you know, experience the good stuff. But as soon as that starts wearing off, and it's not like abrupt thing, it might start, you know, there might be signs of it here and there, but that really is the indication that your baggage is now showing up. It's time to start dealing with the baggage, and your partner is actually the person that helps you see your baggage. That kind of triggers the baggage within you. It tells you, oh, okay, maybe there's something I need to work on here. So let me pause there for a moment. Am I on the right track? Do I understand your question?
I wouldn't know if you're on the right track. I just have the question, you have the answer. But I hear you saying there comes a point where I have to recognize my baggage. And this is coming back to something that we've touched upon a few times in a few of these unpacking episodes. It's not about what the heck is wrong with my partner? What baggage have you brought in? What suitcase are you opening to me now? It's not that. It's becoming aware of your own baggage. Am I hearing you right?
Yes. Because you can do something about this. All right, your baggage you can address, and you can ask your partner for help with that. And your partner can ask you to help with their baggage, but really you can't do anything about it. And usually we want to focus on you should start doing this, you should see someone, you should stop being like your mom, you should, you know, you're behaving like your dad now, and da da da, all those kind of things that I'm sure no one can relate to. The way that it surfaces is focusing on your partner's baggage instead of addressing yours, you know. And it might be that you feel like your partner does something that triggers you, and if they stop that, then there'll be no baggage, right? Then I have no baggage. But that's exactly the gift of a relationship, is that your partner helps you see, you know, those unresolved issues, those unhealed wounds, those unspoken needs come to the surface. And it invites us to be a fuller, better version of ourselves, not only within the relationship, but out there in life. And it seems to me it's part of preparing us for parenthood as well. And maybe we can touch that on that a little bit. What I found is it's like there arrives a whole trailer full, ventermaankie full of suitcases when you have your children, and you're like, oh, what's this? No, it's your baggage. It comes with the kids. So I found different things got triggered within our relationship when we had children. So it's not just what you might expect, like how do we raise our children? What's the different views we have on parenting? It's not just that. It's this child that triggers within us certain things. The child might remind us of our own unhealed wounds or unaddressed needs that we didn't maybe get as a children. And you can react by overcompensating for the things that you are aware of, which develops other issues, baggage. Or you can realize, okay, there's something within me that I have to address. And it might...
Or I just want to say I identify 100% with that. I think our Venterwaantjie really only showed up when we had children. Or you can hide behind identity statements. For me, I think for the first 8 years of being a mother, instead of saying, wait a minute, what's my baggage? What's being triggered here? I hid behind, oh, I'm just not very good with small children. I'll do better when they grow up.
Mm.
But hiding from having to work on those issues that are being triggered behind identity statements.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for sharing that. That's very powerful. It's very powerful. Or labeling your children as, this one is like this. This one is difficult. Instead of saying, well, why is this child a difficult child for me to work with? And of course, there's things that make it difficult. Things that children have to work through and struggle with. Bullying, for example. But what we are talking about here is your baggage that's triggered within your relationship because of the children you have, a realization. So it might be that when your child needs something and it's a need that you never, that was never addressed for you. Let's say it's affection. Let's say your child wants to hold, be held and snuggle. But you never had that, that might make you feel uncomfortable, right? Let's say your child gets hurt and cries. So you never got that kind of empathy. In Afrikaans, we have a nice word, troos, right? You didn't get that. So now you feel uncomfortable trying to give that, having to give that to your child. So you just like, no, stop crying. Don't do that. And that kind of repeats the cycle, the wounding, the unaddressed needs just gets repeated. So our children also becomes something that triggers that within us. And if the focus within our relationship pre-children has been, you are wrong, your partner, meaning your partner is wrong, I'm right, you need to change, I don't need to change. We just do the same with our children when those same things are triggered within us.
If all of you, husband and children included, just do stuff like I do it, then we won't have all these fights.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes. Just be like me. Then we'll all be
able. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course,
yeah.
That won't work. Let me say something about needs, Mariki. So unspoken needs. So when you need something from your partner, it seems to me that people respond in two ways. One person feels like they don't deserve what they need. They are undeserving of that, which shows up as sadness, right? Self-pity, withdrawing. So they feel, I don't deserve it. Actually, it's selfish of me to need anything. I shouldn't need anything. That's the one reaction. The other side of it is, no, it's my right. I have a right to have these needs addressed. You have to address them. And those kind of people will demand, and they'll do that by getting angry, by being mad. So the one side is sad, the other side is mad, trying to either manipulate to get what we need or dominate to get what we need. But really, the only way that we can, in our relationships, try and address this baggage of unspoken needs is to share it and then ask. Ask our partners help. It doesn't mean that they have to do it. It doesn't even mean that they will be capable of doing it. But it helps us take responsibility for it. Doesn't mean that we can outsource all of it. You can ask your partner for help with what you need. But oftentimes it's something that we have to address ourselves. But it can also be very practical. So you can ask your partner to hold you, to talk to you, to face you, to look you in the eye, to go do something specific with you. That's a need. But often we don't want to do that because it's scary and vulnerable. And what if they say no? And oftentimes they will say no, because maybe they don't understand what a big deal it is to you. Maybe you don't understand what a big deal it is to you. So asking is vulnerable, and then if it's not, that need isn't addressed, we might respond in, you know, the sadness or the madness because of that.
But Francois, you know, my husband's supposed to know. We've been married for almost 20 years. Why do I still need to ask him? Yeah. What's your response to that?
Yeah. Yeah, that feeling of you must know by now. By now you should know, right? I think they can say the same thing, our partners, right? There's needs that we are aware of, things that our partner repeats and asks for and hints at that we don't address, that we don't realize is there. And that's where the double gift is within this, the whole baggage thing, right? So if my partner asks for help and support with a certain need, there's a gift in that for me because it helps me grow in a certain area. I need to develop something within myself that maybe I lost. I need to develop something that maybe will serve me in other areas of my life to be able to address my partner's needs. But really, like I shared this morning in the class, often we see those moments where our needs aren't addressed as criticism. We see it as rejection. We see it as, I'm not good enough. You don't care enough, which means I'm not good enough for you to do that. And I think that's what makes us react so strongly to those things. But the wish is there, right? You should just know what I need and know how to give it to me instead of me having to figure out what I need and know how you should address that need.
Well, there we go, Francois. I'll come back to the class that you mentioned in a second because I'm very curious. But there's two things that I hear you repeating, and you said it so concisely right now at the end. For me to be able to get my unmet needs met, I need to understand what they are, and I need to understand what I need to feel like they are being met.
Mm-hmm.
I can't expect my partner to feel it like a blind man with a stick if I don't even know what exactly the root is and how it can be met. How do I explore that? Yeah. How do I unpack my suitcase?
So let's say your need is closeness. You want to feel close. You want to feel connected. Right. If you don't know that's what you need, you might just say, you're never there. You never want to do anything with me. But if you understand, okay, that's my need. I want to feel that closeness and that sense of connection. Okay, how do I feel that? How do my partner address that? Well, when you go mountain biking with me, for example, I feel that we are on this adventure, we are enjoying nature, you know, we chat a little bit here, but we are sharing a moment. That's when I feel the closest and connection. But for another person, it might be, well, when we sit down and we have a coffee and we, you know, face one another and you ask me about my day, that's when I feel it, right? For another person, it might be when we are at a party and I look at you across the room and we make eye contact and you smile at me, then I feel that, even though you're way over there in the room. So understanding what you need is one thing, but then understanding how do I need it to be addressed? And then teaching your partner how to do that, because it might not be natural for them to do that specific thing in that way, because maybe they are the mountain biker and you are the coffee person. So they are drinking all the coffee with you and you think, oh, you're also getting the same thing from this, right? And they're like, no, I need you to be on the mountain bike with me, for example. So teaching one another exactly what you need, which means, you know, communicating, sharing it. And like I said, that can be feel very dangerous because it's vulnerable.
Francois, what are typical ways or what are typical clues in a relationship? Oh, wait a minute, there's something below this. I've heard you say before that if the same conflict loop arises again and again and your fights seem to be about the same thing, maybe elaborate on that and mention some other ways that these baggage roots bear fruit in our relationships.
So repetitive conflict, where the conflict feels the same. So the topic might change from one day to the next, but when the conflict is approaching, you kind of sense, oh, here we go. And you feel powerless to stop it. You feel like, okay, we're going to have the conflict, we'll have the fight, the argument, and we feel that sense of disconnection and loneliness afterwards. But you feel powerless to stop it. You sense it and you go through the motions. You behave exactly the same way you always do, and your partner behaves the same way they always do. That's an indication of there's baggage there that's not being attended to. And the conflict loop, that blueprint, is an attempt to resolve conflict or to avoid conflict. Either one, but actually the conflict is information. What's the information about? It's about your baggage. It's about your needs. So only once you understand, okay, why do I feel like this during this conflict? Why is it such a big deal to me? Why does that bother me? And you're curious about yourself. Only then do you discover those things. So conflict is information. And if you feel it repeating, you know, and you feel like it's the same thing, a different topic, but the same thing, that indicates, you know, issues, unresolved issues, unhealed wounds, unspoken needs, unattended to needs. That's beneath the surface. So be curious.
Francois, I'm pushing in a very specific direction with my next question.
Okay.
I know too many people, myself included, who feel like, ugh, it's not that bad and we can cop on like this forever. And you know, we don't have problems, so we won't go and see somebody. You know, if you only go and see somebody when the marriage is on the rocks or whatever. What's your? I know that your wife and yourself do have had some interventions and continue to do that. Would you please share with us some places that people might knock on somebody's door and say, "It's going okay, but it can go better."
Let me start by saying, I think the main reason behind it is we feel ashamed, right? We feel ashamed because usually those things are hidden. And we look around and all other couples seem fine. Maybe here and there we'll go like, well, there's something going on there, something going on there. But it's as if we believe we should Because we love one another, we should be great at relationships. And love is not enough at all, not even close. So I think there's a sense of shame and disappointment and embarrassment around that, to have problems.
But a false sense of shame, false sense of embarrassment. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the person experiencing it, it's real because I think because we believe love should be enough, and also because you shouldn't have relationship problems. If you have, it's really bad. We should just all know how to be great at relationships, great at communication, great at conflict, all of those things. So I think that creates a lot of resistance. And also there's a lot of bad therapy and approaches. So the stuff that people hear and maybe the stuff they see in movies is advice giving, right? It's like, sit down, you're right, you're wrong, this is the advice, that kind of thing. And I don't think...
Go forth and sin no more.
Yes.
Fight no more.
Yeah, it's your fault. So now you know that and you can be happy.
Yeah.
And of course, that doesn't work. Especially if you don't experience that connection in the session, right? It's just playing the ref. The therapist is playing a ref. Or keeping score, being a judge. Doesn't help a couple. So I think that's another reason people's perception of exactly what it is bad. There's bad therapy out there, bad approaches, bad therapists, like there is in any field. But what I would recommend, if you identify with this feeling of there's this conflict loop that repeats, or you have a sense that, you know, everything's okay, we've learned to just avoid certain topics, but you have a yearning and you have an understanding that there's more accessible to you with this person, and maybe you've experienced it right in the beginning. Go find people, and it's not a case of finding a therapist. Maybe find five and go see them one after the other. And see what that is like. See if you find a connection with the person. Therapists also need to work with their own stuff. So that gets triggered in the space. If they don't do enough work here and enough debriefing and enough understanding of their own stuff, that can contaminate the couple space. And sometimes couples can feel like, okay, the female therapist is on my wife's side now, or the male therapist is on my husband's side now, and playing, you know, playing them off against one another. Or people see it as if they are challenged to change certain behavior as, oh, okay, the two of you are now against me, which also complicates that relationship. But if you find someone that you feel you can trust, and is not sitting there just handing out advice, but really equips you to communicate with one another, I think that's the best a therapist can do, is give you education around things we don't know, we don't learn anywhere else. You know, if it's a podcast, if it's a book, if it's a workshop, so you can educate yourself, but also giving you the tools to communicate with one another, because that's ultimately what you need to be able to talk about these things again and again and again as you figure it out for one another, but also with one another. So don't hesitate, you know, just find people. Often wait, I read a stat, I don't know where, and so I can't say how valid it is, that people wait,
I think it's the Gottman, it's the Gottmans, I think.
Yeah, four to 6 years, you know, from the first sign of serious problems before they see someone. And then often it's too late for many couples, or it's just way harder than it would have been if you just address it soon. You know, my wife and I, we were still dating when we went on a like a pre-marital program around conflict and did imago. So invest as soon as you can. It's my 2 cents on that. Don't wait.
If I can share something that's been very helpful to me, and just a full disclosure, Francois is not paying me to say this, but you've got a relationship masterclass. And at the time of recording this, this unpacking, we are now in series 2 already. Can you tell us maybe a bit about the relationship masterclass and where people can access it, even if they are listening to this a decade from now?
Yeah, you'll find it on my website, the link to register, francoisterhuizen.com or getclarity.co.za will also send you there. And you know, Marike, I was saying this morning, I'm not sure if I'm a master because I feel I'm a student of relationships and learning still. But what I'm trying to do in these series is share the stuff that I've seen, the patterns that I've seen within relationships, working with couples for many years now, and also being in a relationship that's evolving, like going through different phases and changes. I feel very privileged that I'm able to sit with couples and go through their processes with them, see what's happening, because it constantly reminds me of my own challenges in my relationship. So I see that as a big plus on the stuff that I can work on for my relationship. So that's what I'm trying to share there in a structured way. And most of it is geared towards helping people just think differently, right? The whole fresh perspective thing is applicable there as well, to just shift their mindset around their relationship or their view on relationships if they are not in a relationship, to approach it differently and to take responsibility for the things that they can control. That's the aim of it. So you can find it there on the website. I'll probably be doing more of them into next year as well, but we are into series number 2.
So by the time you listen to this podcast, if it's already 2030, you will have a year's worth of binge watching.
Easily.
Of relationship masterclass binge watching.
Yeah. Series is five episodes. So we're working through baggage now. Series 1 was about why did you choose the person you chose? Why did you find this person attractive? And not like,
and I can testify, it's powerful stuff. It's powerful stuff, and it gives practical tools to implement what we've been unpacking now in your relationship. So I would strongly recommend watching it alone or with your partner,
yes,
ideally, but yeah.
Yeah, that's maybe an important point, is if your partner doesn't want to have anything to do with things like that or this, you can change the dynamics of a relationship massively if you change. If you educate yourself, you change the dynamics. And if you change enough, either the dynamics of the relationship changes with you and drastically changes, or you become a person that knows and can make the decision to stay in the relationship or leave the relationship. But usually the person that's stuck in that cycle struggles to make that choice and postpones it.
At least responsibly.
Exactly.
Francois, I think that's it for me for today.
Yes, thank you, Mariki.
Look forward to catching up with you in future on this topic or similar topics.
Yeah, well, I'll keep learning. Maybe in like you said, 2030, I don't agree with myself anymore, but I'll keep learning. I can promise you that. I'll keep learning and discovering and share what I learned.
Yeah. I think as my final comment, if there's one thing that Kung Fu Panda taught us, is that there's a very fine line between master and student anyways. So
Oh
I leave you with that parting gift, Francois.
I recently watched the second one with my children, so it's fresh. Thank you. Yeah, thanks everyone for joining us. We'll see you next time on Fresh Perspective, and we'll unpack some more skills and tools that you will find useful. Until next time, bye.